Welcome to This Is Money podcast. I'm Georgie Frost, and joining me and editor Simon Lambert today is deputy editor Lee Boyce. And the energy crisis continues with bills expected to soar. What should you do if your fixed deal is about to come to an end? Many are in this position, including our Simon. But what's he thinking about doing? Also today, forget awful April. It's been something of a joyless January for the global stock markets. But is it all about Putin? I'm sure he'd like to think so. But what else is at play? Also, is the tech party over? And are UK shares finally about to be in vogue? Plus, could saving rates be about to shoot up? Probably not, but we did get some good news from Nationwide this week. Don't forget you stay up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app. But first, there was a time not too long ago when we were bombarded on our tellies and the radio by chubby opera singers and furry stuffed puppets telling us to switch our energy deals. And indeed, at the time, it was sound advice. But as you won't have failed to notice, we are in the middle of a bit of an energy crisis. It seems the singers, the puppets, and indeed the politicians have all gone a little bit quiet about what we can actually do in the face of huge rises expected in April. With many people coming to the end of their fixed rate deals, you might be wondering, if this is you, what on earth should I do next? But firstly, now look, we don't have to go over the whole wholesale energy prices. We know they're going up. We know it's expensive. We know why. Simon's explained in podcast past. And the energy providers have been dropping like flies. We also know we already have an expensive price cap. That looks likely to shoot up soon. Lee, are there any cheap deals out there?
The short answer to that, Georgie, is no. You can't beat the current price cap. And actually, the current price cap now at the moment looks quite generous at £1,277 a year, which is the average price that you would pay. It's, yeah, not looking good on the horizon. We're going to find out in the next couple of weeks what the next price cap's going to be. We've heard sort of around about £600 mark, which is just massive. And that is a huge jump for people. And of course, we've been speaking about this for the last couple of months, but we're now really starting to get to that point of this cost of living crisis is really starting to crunch and bite for people. And energy bills are a massive part of that. And it's a massive problem. And what happens over the course of this year to try and help negate that, I don't really know. And and actually, there's lots of facets to this. So, you know, you have households, just your regular households that are on, you know, just regular tariffs and whatnot and coming to the end of fixes and that kind of thing. And you have people on prepayment meters that have a slightly higher cap. Then you've got businesses, especially small businesses that don't have a price cap whatsoever. And I've heard all sorts of horror stories in the last couple of months of, you know, bills like doubling from, you know, say 30k to 60k. That's a lot of money. That's a big jump for a business to absorb, and then inevitably what happens from there is the knock-on effect of having to charge more for whatever it is that they're providing, that kind of thing. So it's a massive problem, and it's contributed to inflation. You know, it's a worry, Georgie, and I don't actually really know what's going to happen. This is all going to really rear its ugly head when we find out the next price cap, and that next price cap, it's going to be close to £2,000, I'd imagine.
Yeah, we're hearing it. I mean, even though the price cap will come in what, April, we're going to be hearing about it on the 6th of February, I believe. They give us a couple of months to absorb that news.
Yeah, and I guess that the tiny bit of silver lining to that is that when that kicks in April, you know, inevitably the weather gets warmer, people won't be as reliant of having to put on the heating. You know, there's not that choice between heat and eat. But it's almost like kicking the can down the road, because come October, November of this year, when we come into another winter and people then start cracking on the heating and all that kind of stuff more, you know, that's going to really be when it bites hard.
Well, that's it, Lee. We don't know how long this is going to go on for. We expect it to rise quite a bit in April, but then again, the next time it's reviewed in October and potentially longer. It depends how long the whole global issue with the wholesale prices goes on for. And of course, people are still, I know that the government has changed the directive, but people are still working from home a lot more, so they'll be using a lot more energy. And Simon, I know some of the arguments with cutting the VAT, and the government say, you know, we don't really want it because it's a bit of a blanket approach and it will benefit the rich. But with these bills, you know, 600, 700, you know, potentially by the end of the year, an extra 1,000. And that's just a typical household. If you've got a big family and you are just about managing, that's going to tip you over the edge. There aren't many people who are rich enough to just to go, extra grand.
No, all households are facing a big jump. And it will obviously affect poorer households who have less of a buffer in order to pay for it, more than it will affect wealthier households. But it will affect everyone. And there are actually some households where people might be judged to be wealthy who are taking a huge hit on it. People who aren't even connected to the gas system, people who have to buy in gas or heating oil and things like that, and often get forgotten about in these conversations. But, you know, basically, the price cap at the moment is £1,277 roughly on average, okay? And it's expected that when that ends, it's going to go up to about £1,925. So that's an extra £648 a year for households. That works out as about £55 a month, right? Now, if you're anything like me, your energy bills already feel like a painful monthly expense. I always feel like we're behind on ours. We're always trying to catch up. And you won't be looking forward to them rising by £55. And if you're me, they'll be going up by more than that. Trying to switch won't do you any good anymore, as you just mentioned. There's no point. There's no meaningful switching market. But probably, like me, many of our This Is Money readers, many of our podcast listeners will be able to grudgingly stomach that hike. Okay. It's going to hurt. It's more money coming out of our pockets. At least, I suppose, if you're paying on a monthly direct debit, it's coming out every month. It's much worse for people who are paying quarterly, for example, and don't have smart meters. So they could be having estimates and bills flying around all over the place. And you're just going to feel it as another bit of the cost of living squeeze. But there are people out there for whom it is going to push them into fuel poverty. Mm. And they think that there is potentially going to be an extra 2 million people pushed into fuel poverty. So people who, you know, and in a civilized, wealthy Western society, we really don't want people sitting, shivering in cold, dark rooms and choosing between heating and eating, which is why there is talk that something needs to be done to help these people.
So therefore, you've been writing about the kind of things that have been proposed. I was going to say the government proposals, but these are coming from everyone at the moment. What are looking to be the most likely? I've mentioned there the VAT cut, that's sort of been poo-pooed a long time ago. And what else? What are the options? Because the government don't really have a lot of time. We're supposed to get this new rise announced in February. Obviously, they've got a couple of months with which it's going to be implemented. But you know, people need some help now. And because I want to say it's not just the energy. You said it yourself, Simon. The cost of living is going up. We've got the national insurance potentially going up as well. Broadband prices going up. Inflation. Petrol is at all-time highs.
Yeah. And the feeling is that the government is going to have to do something. That it can't take an attitude of let them eat cake. Not under the current circumstances. Cake, just not great look at the moment. And also, I think they've run through the other options, such as getting Joe Wicks back on YouTube to encourage people to do star jumps and handing out free pets, because pets are really expensive to feed and if they have vets bills and stuff. And so it massively outweighs the benefit of cuddling them. So they're looking at more practical options now, one of which is cutting VAT, which sounds awesome until you realize that VAT is only 5% on energy bills and that you're not going to get 20% cut off your energy bills. So cutting VAT would save about £90 a year. Then there is the failed supplier cost recovery. This is the money that we're all paying to, how can I put it? Subsidize the cost of all those failed suppliers. I think that's the only way of putting it. So when all these energy companies went bust, people have to be shuffled around and bills have to be shuffled about and everything. That all costs money. And that's then taken back through our energy bills. That could save £90 a year, apparently. Moving green levies to general taxation. This is quite a popular one, and not just among a certain branch of the Tory party. for whom anything green is pure evil and woke nonsense that needs to be eradicated stat.
Explain what it is, because some people might be surprised
A big chunk of our energy bills, a sizable chunk of our energy bills, goes on green measures. So making our energy more renewable, more suitable for the modern world that we want to try to move towards, rather than the old-fashioned fossil fuel burning, don't worry about the mess you're making world. That costs money. It's also one of the driving factors in the fact that our bills are going up by so much, because whilst shifting towards the more green and renewable energy sources of the future, we forgot to make sure that we had enough gas storage and energy sources from the past in order to tide us through when things got a bit tricky or Vladimir Putin decided to do some saber rattling. But we pay for these out of our energy bills. Now, the idea is that that's quite regressive, actually, and it'd be better to shift it to general taxation, which is progressive. The more money you earn, the more money you pay. So that would help spread the cost of that. That could take £160 a year out of our energy bills. So obviously just going to push it into tax, but you might be able to delay that. The government borrows quite a lot of money at the moment, so it might be able to tide us over. Defer network costs. Curious one, that. Network costs to do with the infrastructure and everything. £360 a year. Oh, no, £330 a year. Possible on that one. And then comes the big stuff. This is where the government could bring out the big guns. The first option here is direct support to customers. So just giving people money to help them with their energy bills. Now, this could be done through extending the existing grant system, which is not very generous and only available to a small number of households. So you could increase the number of households that count as vulnerable, and you could increase the grant.
Are you talking about winter home allowance and those sorts of things? Don't they come from our energy bills, though?
It's called
then you'd have to pay more, other people would have to pay more in energy to get those, to subsidise those people that can't pay it, unless the money comes from somewhere else?
The government would basically fund this.
Oh, right. So it wouldn't.
Right. So, I mean, and everyone has to, the government doesn't actually have any money itself. They don't all just chip in around the table. Okay. It all comes from us eventually.
Yes.
This is the warm home. Well, all we sort of magic it up. But,
well, yes, that's also true.
In theory, we're going to pay for that at some point. The warm home discount payment, currently £140, and it's only available to some people. You could expand the number of people it is available to and massively increase it to about £500 a year. All this stuff is coming from Cornwall Insight, who are experts in the energy field. These are the suggestions they've mapped out that are open to the government. The other one, which seems much more controversial, is instead of giving money directly to households who are affected, is giving money to energy suppliers. So loans to energy suppliers could take about £500 a year off bills.
Is that loans through the government or loans through banks?
Loans from the government to energy suppliers. Mm-hmm. And the idea here is that this would enable the government to give energy suppliers payments when wholesale gas prices rise above a certain level, in return for them not passing that extra cost onto consumers.
Mm.
Therefore, it softens the hikes and it smooths the prices. The kicker, which would be the way of trying to sell this to people and make it more palatable, would involve energy firms then somehow returning money to the government when prices traded below a certain level. Sounds a bit too clever for its own good. Sounds like a really tough sell to say to people, we're not going to give you money. We're going to give money to the energy companies. But actually, there are a number of people saying this might be the best way to do it. There was a story, a front page story in the FT, from well-placed sources saying that the government was seriously considering this. Ultimately, we don't know which one of these we're going to get. We're probably going to get a package of them, a smorgasbord of energy measures. But we're probably going to get something, because something does need to be done and there's a lot of people who are suffering. I think a VAT cut is sensible. The argument that this benefits the rich and the poor, I think, you know, forget that one. Sometimes there's a lot to be said for a universal benefit. And to be honest, the government has been making money on will be making money on VAT from higher fuel bills anyway. It could just give that one up, do the VAT cut. But the VAT cut isn't going to be enough for the households that are about to see their energy bills go up by £700 a year.
Yeah.
And for whom that's going to be a real problem, they're going to need a lot more help than £90.
Lee, what do you reckon? What should be done?
It's a real tough one, George, isn't it? Because whatever kind of measures you look at, it's going to be controversial, or it's not going to be the right choice, or, you know, it's one of those problems that's just incredibly difficult to solve. And actually,
but do you think something does need to be done?
I think for the most vulnerable households, definitely, absolutely. You know, as Simon said, a lot of us can suck up these price rises. They're nasty. We don't really want to, but, you know, we could suck them up. But there are people out there that can't suck this up. And now, with hindsight, there's a few things now when you look at this, you think, okay, that makes a lot of sense. So, for example, this whole push in recent years about getting rid of things like gas boilers and replacing them with other alternatives, you think, oh, okay. So, you know, there was probably something, some minister looking down the road saying, you know, wholesale gas prices might go up. Well, what would happen? You know, what would be the bill shock? What would happen here? So I think there was a little bit of that kind of going on. And also just, I think that it's one of those things, energy bills, isn't it? Like, you know, we need to pay them. We need to make sure our homes are heated. We need electricity. I think a lot of people don't really think about how it's generated or where the gas comes from and all of that kind of stuff. And I think that it's kind of shone a light on all of that and made us realize that it probably can't go on the way that it had been going on. And that might make changes for the future. Who knows? But the here and now, I think really it's just making sure that vulnerable households are helped. And those households also that are on prepayment meters that are clearly probably already struggling to make ends meet. And we've said it a million and one times, the cost of living crisis, you know, it's not just energy bills. And looking at things now like the state pension rise, you know, that was altered a couple of months ago, now looks incredibly stingy, for example, when you think about how much energy bills will go up for pensioners, just to pluck one example out of the air. You know, it's very hard to swallow that, I think. And it's quite upsetting for a lot of people. Already, I don't like the term fuel poverty. Simon knows this. I think it's just, you're in poverty. You know, it's pretty cutthroat, to be honest. And the thought of another couple of million people, especially those with children, especially older, vulnerable people, actually makes me feel quite sad and upset that we're in this situation. The government has to do something. I think before April, but what that is, Georgia, I really don't know. I don't know what the answer or the solution is. And you have a short-term sticking plaster for a year to 18 months, but there's a lot of industry experts are saying that this could go on for quite a long time. So then what? You know, you have that short-term fix, but what's the long-term fix?
Let me propose something to you. Throw a hypothetical grenade into the conversation. The energy price cap is to blame. Government meddling is to blame for all this.
It's hard because you had a lot of suppliers that have come and entered the market. I would actually argue that some of these smaller suppliers that have come in and undercut bigger energy firms with prices that just weren't viable for the long term, you know, basically living in a kind of scenario where they weren't buying enough sort of gas to last for a long time, unlike bigger companies. You know, it was quite a you know, hand by mouth type scenario. And I think that a lot of people switch energy, but energy suppliers. We've said it for a long time. I've said, you know, the quality of your energy and your energy isn't going to change if you change supplier. You know, customer service might, but what you actually get in your house isn't going to change. So you may as well go for the cheapest price. You know, we've said that for a long time. I'm going to hold my hands up and say that. But bubbling away under that, it seems that there's a lot of companies that just weren't doing enough due diligence. And we, for example, we stress test banks, right? We stress test mortgage lending for, you know, shock events, you know, like the financial crisis and that kind of thing. Why weren't we doing the same in something like the energy market? You know, why weren't we stress testing some of these companies and saying, you know, Ofgem should have been looking at this going, is this viable? You know, is offering these kind of prices viable? And then there's a lot of people, he starts talking about giving loans to energy companies, and you start thinking, God, we're going down like basically nationalizing the energy market again. I had an email actually this week. I thought it was quite interesting. Someone had switched from British Gas, I think, to Avro. And I think this was a business, if I remember rightly. And they switched. And then on that day, Avro went bust. And then as a supplier of last resort, they went back to British Gas. And they were kind of like, we'd finally plucked up the courage to leave British Gas. And then we've literally been shunted back into British Gas. And we're getting back into that point now where we had a load of energy suppliers and we're going to be left with probably a dozen. But it is all just influenced by the energy price gap, as you say, Georgie. But I don't know. It's really hard. Again, it's just hindsight, isn't it? I mean, with the energy price gap, could they have stress tested and said, well, what would happen if wholesale prices went up 10%? What if they went up 50%? What if they, you know, went up whatever percent, what would happen? And there should be scenarios, you know, again, it's hindsight and it's a wonderful thing, but there should have been some stress tests in all of this. I'm adamant of that. But hey, that's my view.
Will lessons be learned? Will lessons be learned? We shall see. Simon, I want you to tell me a story. You were late to this podcast today, but you had a very good reason. You're on the phone to your energy company. So tell us all about it, because you're one of these people in a situation where you come off your fixed deal, I think, what is it, mid-March?
I do. I have a fixed energy deal with Octopus, which ends on the 14th of March. So it's looming, and I had an email from them the other day, which is why I was on the phone to them before the podcast, in order to try and find out a few bits of information that I thought might be useful for this. Now, I think my personal situation here is one that's possibly going to be relevant to a lot of our listeners and illustrates the predicament that lots of people find themselves in. So forgive me for talking our way through it, because I think that a lot of people still don't realize that the best thing they can possibly do if their fix is coming to an end, or the best thing it looks like they can possibly do, and all of the advice is saying this, is just to sit tight and go on to the price cap deal. Because the fixes that they are being offered are well above the price cap at the moment. They are well above the price cap that is predicted to come in when it rises on the 1st of April, that we're going to know about on the 7th of February. And in some cases, they're above the price cap that is predicted to come in when it then rolls around in another 6 months. And now a lot could happen before that next price cap revision. Cornwall Insight suggesting it's going to go up even further, but it might be that the heat comes out of gas and energy prices by then. We don't know. But what we do know for a fact is that there is no meaningful market for switching at the moment. You're not going to save money by doing it. All of the variable deals are pretty much level with the price cap. We had a story about that this week. And the fixed rate deals are much, much more expensive. And if you fix now, you run the risk of locking yourself into overpaying for energy for a very long time. And you might be better off, in fact, you're probably going to be better off taking the price cap, paying a lower price. And even if the price cap then does next time round go above those fixed rates, which is probably not going to go above it, the fixed rates this time round, it's probably going to probably have to wait for next time round, that you're better off saving the money until that happens. And I think that as personal finance journalists, we all think that everybody knows this. We all think that everybody knows just do nothing. But I'm getting a lot of questions being asked of me by friends and family, which indicates that actually they don't know that. And they're saying, prices are going to go up and maybe I should take this fix. So I got my email from Octopus this week. And it says, your fixed tariff is ending. So it talks me through a few things. It's good. It's got a lot of information in it. It says, over the past few months, wholesale energy prices have risen dramatically to historic highs. Unfortunately, that means your new costs are higher than you've been paying. Our commitment to good value, and so on and so on. Okay. Then it gives me three options. So these are my options. One, fix your prices for 12 months. If you'd like to fix your energy prices for the next 12 months, you can do so with our Octopus 12-month fixed tariff. This is our standard fixed tariff, reflects the current wholesale cost of energy with a slim margin to cover our business costs. Has no exit fees, which is good. Estimated monthly cost, £414.
A month?
A month. Just to be clear, 414. Just to be clear, at the moment, we're paying 167 on our existing fix. And that's that includes a chunk that is us trying to catch up with the fact that we fell into the red on the bills. We fell behind because we were using more energy than we thought.
Wow.
Option two, do nothing. Do nothing, and at the end of your contract, you'll switch onto our always good value variable tariff, Flexible Octopus. On this tariff, prices will rise and fall with wholesale costs. It has no fixed term and features 100% renewable energy. Now that is the price cap tariff.
Mm-hmm. We don't say that, right?
But it doesn't say that's the price cap tariff, right, which I think is a bit of an omission here. I think we're at the stage of the game now where energy companies, particularly good ones, okay, like Octopus, and I like Octopus. Octopus is a good energy company, okay? I think it's really good about the way it does things. But I think we're at the stage of the game now where energy companies need to be spelling this stuff out for people. Flexible Octopus, estimated monthly cost, £199.78, so £200 a month. Option three, fix your prices with Loyal Octopus. This tariff is exclusively available to customers who've been with Octopus for more than 8 months. Cheaper than anything available on the market, features fixed prices for 12 months. Their estimated monthly cost on that one is £367. So that's cheaper than the first fix they offered me.
Yeah.
Right? But more expensive than the Flexible Octopus one by a long way.
Yeah.
So my first question is, why are you even offering me the first one if number three is much cheaper? The first one is because it's the one they offer on the open market. The third one is the one that I get because I've been one of their customers. But it's like, well, why offer me the first one? Because actually, when you click through, it gives me the option. I've got an option of whether to do the normal one or the other one. I click through and I have a page with two 12-month fixed tariffs. And the only obvious difference between them is that one of them is going to cost me approximately £60 a month more.
Isn't it like, anchoring though? So it sort of makes you feel like you're being offered a slight discount.
Maybe. And I am being offered a discount by being a loyal Octopus customer. Yeah. I'm also being offered the opportunity to accidentally press the wrong button.
That's true.
But anyway, to go back to this. Now, the obvious thing to do here is the do nothing, is the variable tariff. I think they need to be explaining this as the price cap, as I said. But this email is deeply misleading because my deal ends on the 14th of March. And as we just discussed, that price cap is almost certain to go up on the 1st of April. Now, what this email doesn't make clear is whether the estimate for the next 12 months that it's given here, which says £2,397, is based on the existing price cap that we know is finishing 2 weeks after my deal, after I would start this one, or whether it's based on what they think is going to happen to the price cap on the 1st of April. Because really, if they're giving you an estimated cost for the next 12 months, they should be taking into account what they think is going to happen to the price cap.
Yeah.
So I phoned Octopus and I asked. After a bit of chatting around, it turns out that no, this is based on the old price cap. It's not based on the new one. As I thought, it is misleading. So I need to take into account that I'm only going to get 2 weeks of this estimated monthly cost. Mm. And then it's probably going to go up by about 50%.
Have you done the maths then? So that's actually pretty similar to the Loyal price, isn't it?
No, it's still actually cheaper than the Loyal price. It works out, as compared to the Loyal price, it works out about £67 a month cheaper than the Loyal price.
That's a lot.
Even after the price cap goes up. Oh, and this goes back to my point that I just made. Mm. Now, I said to the chap at Octopus who I was talking to, I was like, well, this is a deeply misleading email. I said, I really think you should be explaining to customers. Nowhere does it say, by the way, this is going to go up 2 weeks into it. And he said, well, we don't know how much the price cap's going to go up by. And I said, no, but you've got a pretty good idea. And he said, well, we don't know, the price cap's definitely going to go up. And I said, well, you know pretty well. And you know it's going to go up by about 50%. I said, your boss knows it's going to go up by 50% because he's on the TV and the radio talking about it all the time. And also, I've got two emails from Octopus this week. The other one this week comes from Greg at Octopus Energy. Yeah. Greg's the boss, right?
Right.
Greg sent me an email saying, "We're so much."
Or everyone?
No, everyone.
All right.
You know, talking about the energy costs and so on, and explaining the situation to people, and said in it, it says, "But the UK and other countries currently face a massive hike in bills as a result of global energy prices. There are things we can do to help UK citizens through this, but to do so, we need energy companies and the government to work together. While there's a lot of coverage on energy costs, indeed, I spoke to Newsnight on the topic recently, I worry many commentators don't truly appreciate the size of the issue or the urgency to act. I won't go into the background of the precipitous rises, but if you're interested, we go into quite some detail on our blog. The key thing is this, the cost of the energy we're buying on the global markets to supply our customers is three times higher than it was a year ago. At the moment, customers on standard variable tariffs are protected from price rises until the government price cap is updated in April. That means for an average home, we're currently buying energy for about £2,000 and selling it for £1,300. However, when the cap is updated, it's likely a typical bill will rise over 75% compared to the same time last year." So they do know.
So
saying we don't know how much price cap's going to go up by is accurate, because they don't know exactly how much it's going to go up by. But their boss is talking about this. He just told us. He was talking about it on the TV. And he's emailing us, telling us about it. So I think it is misleading. So basically, this is all to illustrate, and this is not to gang up on Octopus. I'm just talking about this because of my own energy supplier. And I'm using this because they're actually an example of one that does communicate with their customers and is really good. And lots of the other energy companies out there are nowhere near as good in this sense. So if you are a customer, it's a really tricky thing to pick your way through. But essentially, the answer is that unless you think that the price cap is going to rocket so far that it goes up above those fixed rates, which nobody is expecting to happen, then the probably the best thing you could possibly do when your deal ends is just to sit tight.
Mm-hmm. Lee, just finally on this one before we get to the stock markets, is there anything you can do, really, anything meaningful in the face of awful April? I hate like titles like that, but you know, it's pretty rubbish, isn't it?
In terms of everything, or in terms of your energy bill?
Saving money. No, I'm done with energy. I'm through with it, but it's all sort of linked. But in terms of some meaningful money things, like don't buy any coffee or don't have avocados or whatever rubbish people sometimes say, something meaningful that's actually going to really make people feel better. I mean, one, it's not going to last forever. You know, that's my only positive note to it. But, you know, anything practically?
I feel like anything I'm going to say is going to sound patronising, if I'm being honest with you. Like, it's one of those things where it's not like a one-size-fits-all, you know, sort of answer. It's very difficult. That's a very broad question. It's like, you know, how do I best tackle that? I mean, it depends on your financial circumstances. I always think one of the best things to do is to go around your house and find things to sell and get rid of. We all have so much clutter and rubbish and stuff that other people will buy, and buy quite quickly on things like Facebook Marketplace and all of those, eBays and everywhere. We all have a house net worth, you know, and it's a great thing to do in this cold weather is to just go and have a walk around, even if you just do one room and just get rid of things like books and multimedia.
And walking around keeps you warm, right?
And it keeps you warm. You know, it's got two elements to it, but you know, old clothes, all of that kind of stuff. You can try and sell some of that. People will buy it, and build yourself a little pot maybe from there. That could be your emergency savings pot, you know, to try and use if things really do get dire. But yeah, Georgie, it's such a hard thing to answer. There's so many elements. There's so many people in different financial circumstances. You know, you've got a family, haven't you got a family? You know, have you got savings? Have you not got savings? It's almost like a flow chart in my brain.
Yeah, but we could all do. I mean, anyone who says, even the rich are rich because they're good with the money, right, Lee? So, I mean, you know, everyone could probably do with a bit of financial spring cleaning. I liked your one because most people go, draw up a budget, get an Excel spreadsheet. But actually, you know, if you do want to follow Lee's tips, then I can recommend that Lee does have a book out called Never Go Broke. It's in the background of his picture at the moment and you couldn't see it, but I was pointing at it there. Lee, thank you very much. A good tip. It wasn't patronising at all. Right, I'm going to move on because we're going to leave awful April. I mentioned earlier, joyless January for the global stock markets. This week's Black Monday saw UK stocks lose 68 billion of their value. Bitcoin crashed to a six-month low. It's not a really long low, is it, really? As investors keep one eye firmly fixed on events in the Ukraine, but is it only Putin that has markets spooked? And what on earth, Simon Lambert, is going on? For anyone who's looking at what's happening to their investments and pensions and all that, I mean, it's a bit squeaky bum time.
It is. And Monday was one of those days when the stock market takes an absolute walloping. The FTSE 100, which is the headline index that we all focus on, even though it's not really the best barometer of the UK stock market, you want to take the all share for that. But the FTSE 100 fell 2.6%, and US markets took a beating as well. So what are investors freaking out about now? Investors are freaking out about two things. So the narrative sets, because every stock market wobble needs a narrative. Okay, so the narrative is the Fed raising interest rates in the US, tightening quicker than people thought, the taking of some cheap money off the table, the reduction in stimulus, the getting serious on inflation, deciding that maybe it's not quite as transitory as they thought, and that because of that, less cheap money sloshing about means less cheap money being thrown at the wall marked explosive growth shares, less growth for the US stock market, which is the largest in the world, more pain for investors, time to be risk off, as they say. Also, Russia and the Ukraine. Is Russia going to try to invade the Ukraine? Nobody knows. But there's definitely some fear that that's going to happen. Geopolitical turmoil always worries investors in the first instance. Isn't necessarily always that bad for stock markets. You can map stock market performance over major geopolitical events and conflicts, and they don't really necessarily send shares down. So that combined with the Fed rate thing was the narrative for why stock markets have been falling. But also sometimes the narrative of why stock markets are falling is just because things that go up by a lot have a temptation to come down at some point. And the US stock market has gone up by an awful lot. A large part of the global stock market performance of the past decade has been driven by the US. It's been driven by the US growth stock story. The five companies within the S&P 500, the FAMAGs. Now, this is different to the FANG stocks, okay? FAMAGs, right? Because this takes Netflix out and puts Microsoft in. But those five companies have been represent just 1% of the names within the S&P 500. Mm-hmm. And they have been responsible for 21% of its overall return over the past decade.
Wow.
That illustrates quite how much power these companies have and how much money they're making. We found out last night that Apple, okay, made $93 billion in 3 months.
Yeah, okay, right, isn't it?
The largest corporate profit in history is the ultimate profit machine. Now, betting against that kind of thing has not been a great move, not been a particularly profitable move for investors. So the best thing to do for the past few years has been to just ride that US growth wave. But maybe things are turning around a bit now, because a funny thing happened this week and has happened over the past month is that UK shares have done better than their US counterparts. And for people who are very much used to the UK being a perennial laggard compared to global markets and particularly to the US, that's notable. When I wrote my column this week, the FTSE had trimmed its losses from its peak, recent peak, to about 1.8%, whereas the Dow, one of the main US indices, was off 5.4%, and the S&P 500 was 8.2% off. And the S&P 500 is down nearly 10% year to date. The FTSE 100 is up slightly.
What's that down to, Simon? Or up to?
What is the FTSE 100 up to?
Yeah, what's all it down to?
Oh, what's it all down to?
Yeah.
Well, it might just be coincidence. It's just a very brief moment in market time. It might mean absolutely nothing, or it might mean that maybe the tide is finally turning for you.
Or is the composition slightly different?
Yes, it is. Yeah, so it's a very different makeup. So the FTSE has been considered old hat. It's got old-fashioned, boring companies, nothing really exciting, nothing technology-based, no growth. People just don't like it. It's dull, it's rubbish. It's, what do you want that for? Buy this fancy new thing over here that's changing the world. but it's got some good companies in it. The UK stock market, the all share, it's got loads of good companies in it. It's not just the FTSE 100. FTSE 250's got loads of great companies that do business all around the world. We've got loads of really interesting, creative, smaller companies in this country that do really good stuff. And maybe just people are actually this time around, there is a slight shift in investing thinking. And there is a shift away from that Scottish mortgage style of explosive, disruptive, changing the world, growth investing, to thinking, well, maybe some of that stuff over there looks cheap and could still make some money in the existing world. And what you need for that is the catalyst of big investors deciding that actually a market now looks good. Because we've heard this time and time and time again about, okay, it's the UK's year, it's the UK's year, it's the UK's year. It's never the UK's year. It's always the US's year in terms of investors. Just like we keep hearing talk about this rotation from growth to value, growth to value, growth to value, which people say it's happening now, and then it rotates straight back. It might be different this time. You need those big investors to sit up and take notice. And there was a couple of notes put out by big US banks this week, JP Morgan and Morgan Stanley, that were very positive on the US. If you see much more of that, you might start to see finally the UK pick up. And there will come a point where eventually the UK stock market does outperform the US. It's just we've been waiting a really long time for it to happen.
On a practical note with this, Simon, before I move on, although I will ask you about the tech party, but if you are approaching retirement or you need your money in investments at the moment, you've seen them drop a lot, what's the advice?
Don't panic. Yeah. The worst thing you could have done on Monday was looked at stock markets in a sea of red, panicked and sold out, because on Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday, they went up. So the risk is by the time you already see the big stock market falls, it's maybe too late. Mm. That's not to say that you might not want to have a strategy for what you might do in those instances. Or perhaps you might want to reevaluate the investments that you have and go, okay, well, has the world changed? Are these the right investments? Are they the right investments for me? Am I taking the right amount of risk? And all these other things. But don't sell into a sea of red, because it often turns out to be the wrong thing to do. And all you're doing is locking in the losses and not giving yourself the opportunity for your investments to go back up. Mm-hmm. And that's very important if you are an investor who's approaching retirement or in retirement, because you've got less opportunity for growth in the years ahead, because you've got a shorter investing time horizon, and you've also got less opportunity for earning money from your own income that you can just pay into your investment account and go, okay, well, it's down by X amount, but I'm just going to put this extra money in.
Is the tech party over? I'm seeing a few articles headlined as that.
100% not. I mean, in the sense that some of the extreme ends of it give us some very interesting snapshots of the stock market. Tesla is the world's largest car company by market cap. That's like the value of all of its shares added up. And it is equivalent to the value of the next 9 biggest car makers combined. That's a list that includes Toyota, Volkswagen, Daimler, which is Mercedes-Benz, Ford and BMW. I can definitely envisage a scenario where maybe at least a few of those companies might be able to flog quite a lot of electric cars in the years to come, get their act together, and maybe Tesla might be slightly overvalued when you compare it to that. The world's biggest company, Apple, what we just talked about, it has a market cap of $2.7 trillion. That's the equivalent of the entire FTSE 100 index. Apple makes a lot of money. Can it keep making that much money? I mean, there's got to come a point where a company's making so much money that something happens to stop it making so much money. So, you know, again, interesting snapshot. Rivian, this is an example more of massive exuberance, is an electric truck maker. At the end of 2021, it had made about 1,000 trucks in its entire existence. Its shares had slid 60% from their high. However, it still has a paper value of $56 billion, which is larger than Honda and a notch under Stellantis. Stellantis you won't know about, but it's basically the massive conglomerate that owns Peugeot, Citroën, Vauxhall, Fiat, etc. And there's a truck maker that's only ever made 1,000 trucks that's valued as more than that and a bit bigger than Honda as well. So, you know, these are signs of potential exuberance in the market. But the tech thing, no, of course, like, you know, the disruptiveness of the digital world and the digital world being brought to bear on other parts of other sectors and other industries, I think we're only a short way into that. I think there's a much further to go with that. Mm-hmm. But I think maybe some of the great successes of the years ahead might not be the ones that have been the stratospheric high flyer story stocks of the years past.
All right, then. All right, finally, Lee, some relatively good news for savers. Nationwide will be upping rates on a number of its saving deals by at least 0.15%. I said relatively, didn't I? It comes, rather belatedly, after the Bank of England's December base rate rise to 0.25%. Lee, there's always a but, isn't there? Not everyone gets this rise.
There's a huge but, Georgie. Yeah, so this time last week, I asked Ed Magnus, our savings reporter, to sort of get onto some of the bigger building societies, find out what they were doing for savers. You know, are they going to pass on this base rate rise? You know, that's what we wanted to know. We've been waiting around just thinking, when are they going to do this? When's it going to happen? When are we going to see some movement in the market for savers, especially building societies? You know, they're meant to be the kind of good guys more so than the big banks. You know, we expect them to be on the members' side and really sort of pass these on pretty swiftly. Anyway, we got in touch with a number of them, and Yorkshire Building Society, Skipton and Newcastle were hiking variable savings rates from the 1st of February. So there's a little bit of light there, thinking, okay, there's a little boost. You know, they're doing the right thing. They're going for it. We didn't get an answer from Nationwide. They were still sort of dragging their heels. We weren't too sure what the plan was. Then yesterday morning, Thursday morning, I receive an email from Nationwide, and I'm excited. It says, the subject line, Nationwide makes changes to savings rates. I thought, here we go. I rubbed my hands. I thought, this is it. They're really going for it. I forwarded it on to Ed. I said, victory. It's there. They're doing it. They're going for it. And then I kind of scrolled down to the bottom of the press release and realised that they were upping the rates on 18 of its products. Now, Nationwide has a huge suite of savings products. Then I looked even further. 12 of those 18 are children's accounts. 3 were loyalty accounts and 3 were regular savings accounts. So
that's pretty rubbish then, isn't it?
Not as easy access and no boost to fixed rates. It was just a bit rubbish, if I'm being quite frank with you. You know, at least they're passing it on to some savers. And we've had this argument when we've spoken on this podcast before. You know, Nationwide is way bigger than any other mutual that I've mentioned. And some of them are quite sizable. Yorkshire's quite sizable. Coventry, big building sites. But Nationwide just, you know, dwarfs them all. And if they hike the rates by 0.15% on all of its products, then, you know, that is going to cost it quite a lot of money. But I think savers still expect it. And the thing is, it offers easy access at 0.01%, just like the big banks. And that's not budging. And it would have been nice to have seen maybe a few better changes. But there's a few chinks of light, Georgie.
Well, tell me, Lee.
For example, the regular saver is pretty good, 2.5%. Of course, you won't get that on the full amount because you can only save up to £200 a month into that account. But it's a great starting account. And those regular savers are a great place if you're someone that hasn't, you know, got themselves a little savings pot. It's all about a regular saver. Really good to get in that habit. It's helped to buy ISA. It's gone up to 1.25% from 1%, so it's a 0.25 percentage point hike. I should point out that the regular saver has gone up by 0.5%, so that's way more than the base rate. As I said, there's a number of children's accounts that have been boosted, including its ISA, which I know is a popular product, and then it's got a couple of loyalty products, loyalty ISA, loyalty saver, loyalty single access ISA, all going up from 0.25% to 0.4%. Again, I mean, you have to have a current account or be a member of Nationwide to take advantage of that, so it shuts some people out. But look, Georgie, I will cling on to any little rays of sunlight that I can find in the savings world. And at least, you know, there are some movements. There's still absolutely no noise from the big banks whatsoever. And in fact, Ed said to me, should I do the same with the big banks? Should I go and find out if they're going to pass it on to savers? And I said to Ed, do you know what? I just wouldn't bother because I know what the answer is going to be. I know what the answer is going to be. And if they were going to raise even a rate by 0.15%, they'd be all singing and all dancing about it and, you know, pat themselves on the back. We ain't going to see that. So, you know, at least some of the building sites are doing the right thing. It's going to be 1st of February, so it's that Tuesday, and there should be a few better rates. I've actually noticed at the tail end of this week as well, there's definitely been a couple of savings rate changes, which indicate that rates might be going up a little bit. And there might be a couple more base rate rises on the horizon. There might be one, there might be two. That's probably where we would see more biting changes. But the big issue, Georgie, as we've said and as we know, is inflation is running away. Mm. And, you know, 0.15 percentage point hike into a rate, or even 0.25% if base rate went up, or even 0.5% at the rates that we've got at the moment, so his rates, you can't beat inflation. It's just going to be impossible. And I can't see, like the energy market, wholesale prices being high, I can't see that gap. That gap between what you can get on a savings account and inflation is massive. Mm. And it just erodes away your cash in real terms. So you can only basically get the best that you can, but it's not going to beat inflation. And I'm really, 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 really sorry about that.
It's all right, Lee. It's not your fault. Are we going to get another base rate rise next week?
I think it would probably be too early. But, you know, I don't have form in predicting this correctly, Georgie. And that's why, as I have said in the last few podcasts, I'm making zero predictions. So I'm going to sit firmly on the fence and say, maybe.
Yeah, so someone asked me, and I said, I'm about as good with this as I am with football scores, i.e. whatever I say, go for the opposite. And it will be right. Simon?
I don't know. There was markets are apparently 95% on for it. So it's an almost racing certainty, as they say. But there was one of those last year when it
was going to say
absolute
certainty
that it was going to happen. It didn't happen. And then it happened the next month when people thought it wasn't going to happen. So who knows?
Who knows?
Well, maybe. Is that an okay answer?
That'll do.
I think they might hold off, actually, but you know.
I said that, which means that they're going to do it.
I think the cost of living crisis stuff does.
Yeah.
I think, ironically, inflation is doing more in terms. Inflation is doing more to trim inflation than monetary policy does, in a weird way. So you know, I don't know.
We'll find out, as I said, next week. You can keep up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app. And if you have any comments or questions for the team, anything you'd like them to look into, Simon?
You can email us at editor@thisismoney.co.uk. You can tweet us at thisismoney. You can come to thisismoney.co.uk/podcast to find all the podcast past and join in the debate in reader comments.
And if you like our podcast, why not rate us on iTunes? It helps people find us.